The Production Expert Podcast is brought to you with the kind support of Arturia, Avid, Source Elements, and RSBE Audio Solutions.
Welcome to the Production Expert Podcast. I'm Julian Rogers, and in this week's edition, Asher and I are joined by Anna Bullock. We are going to be discussing the importance of ethics in AI. And that's a subject that's, you're something of a specialist in, Anna, so we'll get on to that. I'm going to hand over to Asher, and you can start us off.
Sure. So before we get into the very interesting topic of ethical AI, Anna, can you sort of briefly tell our listeners a bit about yourself? Because you have a very interesting background, your work, and for those of us who haven't heard of ReSpeecher as well, what it is exactly?
Yes. Thank you for hosting me on this podcast.
A pleasure.
It's a great pleasure. And so briefly about myself, about my career. I started in the field of security and defense policies for many years, thinking of how about threats that affect society and individuals that can stretch to national security or international security paradigm, particularly how technologies can be used and misused in information ecosystem and can be used in information and psychological operations, and those many products and tools are available by private companies and available on the market. So it's interesting intersection between public and private. After that, I joined the technological sector. Why I've done that? Because for me, it was really interesting to bring this more strategic knowledge into technological and innovators' teams to think more profoundly and in strategic terms about the products that they're developing and releasing. So that's my role, is to create those mitigation measures in products or that like technological products that can be AI and not only algorithms, and to think what the impact they may have on individual user or on society or on business itself.
So a really important role.
Yeah, yeah. And about ReSpeecher, so let me know where I can talk about that as well.
Yeah, just to sort of explain what it does, really. I mean, I've tried it and I was incredibly impressed by how realistic it sounded. But go ahead and just explain to our listeners a bit.
Yeah, sure. So that's exactly on my journey when I joined AI space, a generative AI space. And when we talk about what is generative AI, it's about audio, text, video and image generated completely from artificial intelligence and neural networks, machine learning algorithms that can fully create this digital content or manipulate it. ReSpeecher is a voice cloning technology. It's in space of audio generative AI. The audio output is created by artificial intelligence. And what we do is we help one person speak in another person's voice. What it means is that we take around like from 2 minutes of audio recordings of your voice, from 2 minutes to 30 minutes. It depends on the quality that we have to achieve. And we create this target voice model. What I mean by target is that we take those voice samples of this particular person, we create an AI voice model, and then another person, like source speaker, can drive this voice in, including in real time. So we have achieved this quality of technology that right now, even on this podcast, I could be speaking in another person's voice.
Which is really incredible what you can do with that, but it also poses some really kind of large risks as well. For example, cloning historical or public figures as well, which will be really interesting to talk about. But it's worth mentioning that you actually synthesized a young Luke Skywalker's voice for The Mandalorian. Is that correct?
Exactly. Young Luke Skywalker's voice, as well as Darth Vader's voice. It's Obi-Wan and Mandalorian, but also we received an Emmy Award for Nixon's voice for a project with MIT.
Incredible. I mean, I tried the text to speech conversion and I thought it was fantastic. But I did notice that the difference between sort of, you know, certain punctuation, like a full stop or a comma, is really important to, you know, the fluidity and the flow of the voice, because it can actually sound, well, it sounds incredibly convincing anyway, but depending on the punctuation, it can sound completely human. I don't know if you tried it, Julian, but it's really incredible.
I haven't yet. I mean, it's a thing that I've been paying a great deal of attention to, just because it does strike me. I don't know if we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but it strikes me as if the most convincing and therefore the most biggest kind of a potential threat to kind of like people behaving as they should is in voice synthesis, just because from what I've seen, it is far and away the most convincing. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are technical reasons for that, but, you know.
Yeah, I would like to intervene here because there, and I think for the audience, it would be really interesting to know more about techniques in voice cloning and generative AI audio, because there are two ways to generate voice is speech-to-speech mm-hmm. and text-to-speech.
Yeah.
So something you've tried is text-to-speech, where the input is text and output is audio. And this approach is really common. So you will find a lot of applications online, like cheaper. But the problem is to control performance, intonation, and accent. Speech-to-speech is something that is used in high-quality post-production in entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. In movie production, and it was for many years a primary focus for speech, although we have two options. But what we have reached is a hyper-realistic voice cloning. What it means that when one voice actor, that is a source speaker, so we keep a human in a loop, speaks in another person's voice, but this voice actor uses his or her performance and accent. Though we have also accent conversion, so we can apply another technique to fix that. But what it means that in your production of content, you can really reach this natural performance, and it's about speech to speech.
What I'm hearing for sort of maybe more familiar technology to our audience might be, as I understood it, what you're saying is that you can take the natural intonation and rhythm of someone speaking in their own voice and transfer that into another voice, but the same performance, correct?
Exactly. So we keep performance.
So in that case, this is kind of like the stuff that we've seen on the blog with the Krotos products,
oh, yeah.
where you can vocalize sound effects or monster noises or things like that using your own voice as a trigger to perform. But rather than it being these other sounds, it's someone else's voice, which is, I mean, yeah, hugely powerful. Also, the sync aspect of it sort of reminds me of the sort of Vocaline family of products, where you can kind of take something as a dub and a second. It's like that, but using an entirely different technological approach, but the same driver, as you were, the same performance interface of, you know, a voice is a thing that, if you want it to sound like a voice, don't try to program it in using a QWERTY keyboard when you've got a voice already, I suppose is what I'm saying. Although, obviously, you've just said that you can do that. What I want to jump on is, I remember this from back in 2016. I wrote a piece on the blog about Adobe Voco, which was something that Adobe were working on. They kind of did something like this, and it was the first time I'd heard of this. And immediately we jumped onto the ethical use of it.
Yeah.
It was, there's a post from November 2016. Adobe Voco, should we be afraid? And immediately, and I'm scrolling down it. I wrote this, but honestly, I don't remember the detail of it. But immediately, we're into there's a video and there's pictures of Donald Trump, and you know, and you can imagine the kind of shenanigans that people are doing and all of that stuff. It's the first thing that anybody thinks of, and the reason I mention that isn't because, you know, somebody else has tried this thing. What it is that's from 2016. And considering the pace of development, particularly in AI, and we see the huge stuff that's happened just in the last, you know, 12, 18 months with, for example, with generative AI, it's a technology that's been around in any kind of usable form for kind of, you know, that's a significant chunk of a decade, this is why I'm sort of going, right, I shouldn't be as surprised as I am that the results are as, you know, convincing as they are, because convincing doesn't seem like the right word. It's just kind of like, yeah, it's the voice.
I mean, they're so convincing that actually, I'm sure you remember, Anna, and you know more about it than we do potentially, but back in November last year, there was the actor strike in Hollywood, and they came to some sort of agreement. I'm not exactly sure what that entailed, but it sort of led to Joe Biden actually signing a broad executive order. So it basically required that developers of the, you know, AI system share their important information to the US government. And I imagine that's something that you're working on currently with ReSpeecher, if that's right, Anna.
Yeah, sure. So let's get back to fears and sure. What this technology imposes. And mm-hmm. then that would be a more logical transition to a question of strikes. So it's cloning and generative AI, audio generative AI, uses biometric data. So it's a bit different when we recreate, for example, language models and using someone's copyrighted work for doing that. In audio space, it's about recreating your digital replica. And it's about recreating your digital identity online. That's why this particular technology, it's audiovisual generative AI, is of particular interest in this space. And what it means that recreating your digital replica is that you should provide your consent and permission of doing so. And why it's important in industry, in entertainment industry and content creation industry, but not only just for individuals as well, is that you can keep the stream of compensation. So first, and when I'm looking at this technology, there are several layers of impact of this technology. So the first and basic impact is on individual. So you as a person having your biometric data, that is one part of that is your voice, and another part is your show features. So a training voice model is about taking your biometric data, that is voice, and providing you with this AI model that you can potentially use, for example, for not spending so much time on voice-overing your audiobook or creating content. But it's also a potential threat that your identity can be stripped from you and can be used, for example, to defraud you or defame you using your identity line. That can affect your image reputation. So it's basically defamation cases, but it's also like stripping your data privacy. So when we go looking on more broader scale on social impact, it's about using someone's biometric data, that is voice, and creating this public persona, and then spreading disinformation that can be scaled really fast with AI tools. So what AI, generative AI provides, it's scalability of spreading information and scalability of... Yes. It can be scalability of just spreading information, but in misuse, in negative use, it's misinformation. That's why it's really important to differentiate synthetic media from deepfakes, because synthetic media, the terminology of broader application of this technology that can be used positively in entertainment, in medical direction, because we also help those people that, for example, have undergone laryngectomy operation and losing their voice box, providing them conversion into healthy sounding voice or preserving their voice. So synthetic media can be used really positively. But then there is a terminology as a deepfakes. And deepfakes, how it's different from synthetic media, is that it's the same concept but used with different intent, with intent to manipulate your attention and information consumption. Mm-hmm. So make you believe in that never has happened. And that's really important for everyone to understand. So when we come to understanding that these technologies both can be used positively and negatively, then we come to understanding how to mitigate this potential negative use of technology. Mm-hmm. And it comes really to those that develop and unleash this technology to public use. It's about how we build in our workflow of our product development when we onboard our users to make sure that they have permission for voice that they want to replicate. And it's not only to make it like provide a permission that you're owner of your voice, because if you're owner of your voice and you want to monetize it, it's totally okay. But it's also to make sure if you're already not alive and another person, like, you know, it's not among us, is what we can do to make sure that family members, estate holders, and copyright owners of this particular identity of this persona also continue monetization, and also aware this, that this particular voice is used, or likeness, I like more the word likeness in this case, because likeness entails not only voice but image, that they keep the control of how the voice is used. So how we approach it at First Picture, and it was long before the actor strike even happened, that we launched our own proactive measure unleashing this technology, that we built these best practices. And with these best practices and our own policies, we started to influence the whole industry, how this new technology started to be adopted. When you're opening up such a technology and when you're leading this technology, you're really also responsible for that. Mm-hmm. So what we demanding that and still demanding is always a permission from the voice owner. And we are providing a service to train the voice model. What it means, they do not own this voice, but the project owner and who comes to us that to use this voice, they have to provide permission, and they already negotiate with voice owners this compensation. And if the voice owner is already deceased, so it's about taking permission from the family members, because the context of is used is really important, estate holders and copyright owners.
Ever wondered what it's like to mix an entire album for Kanye or layering vocals for Chris Brown? Join your hosts Cash and G every fortnight as we sit down with some of your favorite artists, producers and engineers to talk everything music, brought to you by Avid Pro Tools.
That sounds great.
These are ethical guidelines, which are really good, obviously, to abide by, that ReSpeecher is doing, which is great. But this isn't something that's sort of a legislation across the board to all of these kind of models, because there's a lot of open source software that people use to generate, you know, really abusive material and images of people's likeness and videos and that sort of thing, which I know there are a lot of companies and, people trying to combat this. But this is something that ReSpeecher has actually... You've taken it upon yourselves to act ethically, but it's not necessarily something that all developers are doing, if I'm correct in thinking that.
Exactly. And there is market segregation between tools that want to scale fast and get a lot of VC funding, because VC funds today, they look at another traction of users, for example. So my message is that trust is not yet a business model, trust and things. And it's interesting because I think it should be in other way, that trust and ethics should be a business model. That even those venture capital money, when they're flowing into fast-growing technologies, they should look into that. What's also interesting that our best practices are completely mirrored in what Actors Strike have achieved in US. Mm-hmm. So there is new technology as digital replica, and actors and voice actors, they're protected if they're part of the union, that if, for example, a studio is taking the digital replica, though the compensation stream is secured, and they have a control over the digital replica that is basically likeness. So, and they have to release a consent when the digital replica is used in production, film production, post production. and have to be aware, they should be aware and use a compensation. And I think the future of AI, it's and how we kind of set the boundaries and how we define what is good or bad, whereas gray area, it will, of course, it takes time. And it takes time in a sense that this particular best practices, for example, from risk feature, that a resolution of SAG-AFTRA, they would come more international. They would, like, you know, would have a spillover effect to more countries and to more unions. Then we have a huge, like, bigger pushback to technologies and those tech companies that want to just, like, scale fast, but then to solve everything in legal domain and actually invest in ethics and safety from the beginning in the teams. Of course, we don't live in you know, in perfect world, so it won't happen fast. But I think with this pushback that we are doing, it's important. And why it's important for me personally, and spending time already not in one generative AI company, is because there's bigger sustainability how you unleash novel technology. So novel technology is really unknown to the final
Absolutely.
User.
Yeah,
it creates a lot of fears. So to combat those fears, you have to build trust in this technology. And building trust means that you have to provide some clear answers how we protect you, in this case, your digital identity, digital likeness, for your, like, for adoption and feeling like, you know, good in using this technology. For example, voice actors and actors. When we provide clear answers to that, then there is bigger adoption of this technology, meaning more sustainable growth of technology integration in more production, more post-production, more content creation, and less, you know, legal cases and court, and even over legislation. So what happens when companies that do not look in trust and safety, they unleash technology, then they bring us to over legislation. And that's not the case we would like to see in every technology, because every technology brings, like, you know, good and bad.
There's a word that you used in there, Anna, consent. And correct me if I'm wrong, but what I've been hearing from what you've been saying is that ResearchBeacher have anticipated and acted kind of proactively to mitigate the consent stuff, rather than to do what so many technology companies do, which is to go, we've made some technology, it's nothing to do with us how people use it, but to say, actually, this is really important for lots of reasons. And I'm seeing a commercial advantage, rather than just a purely do the right thing ethical one. Of what you're doing by doing that is you're presenting in any business decision whether or not to go with a particular provider, there's a risk benefit analysis that has to go on. And this is such a new area that if you're being seen to be, you know, actively responsible around the ethical aspect, that could end up messily in court, then that's a benefit for a potential look. This is why you should go with us rather than, you know, do it another way. I mean, am I talking about something that's an active topic with you in house?
Exactly, like, correct. Because as I said, any novel technology, and it's important to build trust in something that you don't know, so you have to clarify those borders. And how you build trust is actually by that permission consent in generative AI. So how AI is different from any other technology, because it uses personal data, and AI is actually built on all data acquisition as a building of raw models. So let's envision how AI works. You collect a lot of data, so you build this raw model that is on basically backyard of your technology, of a company. And then in audiovisual generative AI, when you recreate someone's likeness, we actually use just one specific person's biometric data. And that's where this insecurity can come from. The insecurity that it's not just any content that can hit you in your feed, but it's your image or it's your voice that you can find online. And then you may wonder, like, how it appeared there and how anyone without your permission have used it, or even though next level monetized it, or though, like, you know, even higher level used your identity to spread some misinformation. And I think this particular case in generative AI is really important when technologists and companies that want already producing this technology, delivering it to the market, when they think how they respect the rights of this particular person. And that's where the consent and permission is so important. And that's why we would have a lot of conversations now in many regulation spheres, how to protect individuals and public personas from being stripped from this likeness. But the problem here is that many discussions on regulatory space, they focus on more strategic level, but sometimes they don't focus how to protect you as a citizen from this technology. So for instance, if there is a case of Taylor Swift and she has a lot of and legal support to protect her, so it's possible to push this agenda, but to protect an individual and a citizen, then he or she is not that well protected. So we would need a lot of more answers on legal landscape, how to do that. And also in industry sphere, actors and voice actors, and why unions became so important, because it's collective power of protecting one individual. And collective power is important here, because, again, if industry sets up in best practice, is something that we've done already from our side as technological developer of voice cloning, and then unions that are supporting this best practice, that consent is so important, because first it secures your data privacy, your privacy, and also your monetization, because it's important for your career. Then this practice eventually can influence that legal landscape.
The Production Expert Podcast is made possible using the new Source Nexus suite from Source Elements, the professional way to collaborate over the internet, along with high definition, low latency audio and video. Need to record an interview or a podcast, or collaborate with others for songwriting, review and approval, remote editing, and more. With Source Nexus suite, using any browser, you'll get studio quality audio and video, along with custom built tools for seamless integration with your DAW. Pricing starts at free. Get your account today at sourceelements.com.
That's a really important point. Another thing that comes up as well, which I suppose is not as important as obviously protecting people's likeness and things like that, but it's also the, you know, ownership and creative rights and keeping track of those things, because I'd like to talk to you about those audio watermarks that you're currently working on, because one of the potential issues that come up is, you know, keeping track of who the original creator of a piece of content was, or, you know, sort of the original source as well. And we know that with metadata, that only works to an extent, but it can be overwritten as well. So, I've read about you working with the Content Authenticity Initiative, which is really interesting. And you're developing something called Audio Watermark. So I'd love to know a bit more about what that entails, really.
Best practice is one thing, but then we have to provide some technical solutions to build it, for building trust. So, I would always emphasize about trust in the sphere of generative AI, because it's not only responsibility of one player. So let's imagine it's a whole ecosystem of media consumption. It's about tools developers, and Respeecher is a developer of a tool.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tool for generating an audio for voice cloning. Then this particular format of audio is used by content creator and shared in dissemination platform that can be social media platform, but also in other platforms. And then there is a consumer. So this ecosystem and how you interact with that, it's important that you understand where the particular content came from. So the authorship.
Yes.
And this content authenticity initiative, it's an open source code to integrate digital signature that contains information about author and by which technology this particular piece of content was created. It's about keeping the nutrition label about the digital content. And when we integrate as a tool this particular metadata that our user created this audio file on our platform, then when this user used it in any post-production tool to integrate it into another video, and then when this video was shared on social media platform and any other dissemination tool, then it's more clear for final user to click on see icon and read that metadata that where this came from. But what it means, it's about changing content consumption behavior, and it will take some time. So we should be used right now that if we are not sure about the originality of this particular content, we have to check this metadata. The negative side of provenance is that it's not that robust against manipulation itself. So there are other techniques how to make sure that we can build this trust. So there is no silver bullet in here. So it's like combination of tools. So it's provenance, fingerprinting, watermarking, action. So these four techniques can ensure that we would get all information about the content that we are consuming. But we always can provide many tools. So this for provenance, fingerprinting, watermarking detection. But it's also important that final consumer, the person that scrolls social media and sees this video or audio and understands that he or she has to click this C icon and read information about this metadata, where it came from, whether it was AI manipulated. That's about changing the consumer behavior. So it's also media literacy. So about differences between provenance and watermarking is that watermarking is more robust. So it can be visible. In audio, it is invisible, of course. But there are questions how to make it robust and not distorting the quality of audio. That's something that we're working on. It's in progress. I would say right now in industry of generative AI, we have a progress on provenance. So it's something that all industry players from tools of generative AI, dissemination platforms, and consumers or fact checkers, journalists can use already. It's provenance. Content Authenticity Initiative, C2PA standard.
Mm-hmm.
On watermarking, that every company and many companies that are providing their own watermarking solution that is not open standard. And when it's not open standard, it means that it will be limited adoption and limited access to reading this information about this file. So it mainly means that companies that provide such technologies, they build their own and they can read information about their own files. So it's not scalable, the problem of scalability. And the same about detection tools. It's a problem of scalability because you build your detection tool and it's always an arms race that you have to have an access to all updated algorithms of a creation of generative AI. And to get that, you have to contact, for example, all developers of such technology on the market and get the samples of the output files integrated in your detection tool and build the best detection tool. But what we've done, we are partnering with detection tools and we decided not to build our own. And that exactly detection tool spotted that Biden's voice was recreated by one of the existing tools on the market. Mm.
So it's a really interesting distinction that you're drawing there between I think in this world where these technologies are increasingly common, a certain amount of responsibility lies with the consumer of information to make informed choices and to become more literate in things like provenance. We can't tech our way out of this. It's a combined effort. And if you see something that is surprising for whatever reason, perhaps one of the things you need to start asking yourself is, who is it who's saying this? Obvious examples are like, we talk about the manipulation of the political process and, threats to democracy and stuff all the time. But, there's more everyday stuff. If you are seen as a trusted source of consumer information, there's a chap in the UK, Martin Lewis, who's a money expert, offers consumer advice for people for financial products. And I'm sure I read recently there was a case of him being AI cloned or whatever to promote a spurious product. And that kind of thing is hugely damaging to somebody who's built a reputation on trustworthiness. And it's not, it's not a threat to democracy, but it's a threat to people's, financial well-being and someone else's livelihood. So, it's still bad. it's been a really interesting conversation. I have to say, we're starting to run quite long. So I'm wondering if there's anything that we need to talk about before we wrap the show up. Is there anything that you feel that you haven't said that is kind of important to be in there before we move on, Anna?
No.
Okay.
No, I just think it's fantastic what Respeech are doing and the fact that you're abiding by these ethical guidelines. And again, what Julian said, it's up to us as the consumers as well to choose to work with companies like Respeech and companies that practice ethics and do things properly and also do fact checking and things like that to make sure we're getting the correct information as well.
Yeah, responsible actors, absolutely.
I just wanted to drive this comparison that 20 years ago, then when many websites were not secure, so there was no HTTPS and security signature of a website, so you could potentially land on websites that would strip you of your information. But when industry standards appeared of securing the website with the lock that you have, you see website, so you are worried today that you potentially may land on unsecure website and you might be stripped of your data. So my suggestion is to look at content consumption like this for content consumption users, that if the content is not signed, it might be potentially also dangerous. It's a big word for content, but it's question like whether you should trust it or not. And I think it won't happen really fast in generative AI space, but it is already happening because even Content Authenticity Initiative, it's already 5 years old, mm-hmm. and it takes time for companies to join it. And there is only one a synthetic audio company that has joined its Respeecher. So it's says a lot about how the market is progressing in ethics and safety.
Absolutely.
An area we'll watch with interest because it's certainly going to be busy. With that, I think we should move on and move to Find of the Week.
RSPE Audio Solutions design, sell, and install professional audio and video equipment. Their team are available by phone, live chat, or email to receive and process orders. They have everything you need to build or upgrade your home studio to ensure you can continue to work from home. If there is anything they can do to help, reach out or shop online at rspeaudio.com.
Anna, what is your find of the week?
Well, it's a tough question because it's only Monday.
Good, we've never heard that before, but that's brilliant.
That's, yeah. That's a very, very astute observation. What is your find of last week?
But look, I'm reading a lot of books, and I would suggest our audience two books if you want to to understand more about AI on not really difficult terms like terminology, etc. So the one book that I read is A Brief History of Artificial Intelligence by Michael Wooldridge. So it provides some really good brief history for AI, and I think it will be interesting for our audience to read about how it appeared and what the progress is and what actually the safety and security boundaries. But also another book that is really close to my heart because I'm coming from security and defense background, and I look at the world in more strategic terms and at the sphere of artificial intelligence also. So there is a huge question of how the AI will be progressing and who will take like a reign of AI in geopolitical terms. So the book of Chip War by Chris Miller is interesting book, and it's really well written, and it's really interesting to read about semiconductors and microchips, and because every product that we are developing right now, it depends on GPUs and computational power that we can acquire. So every geostrategic place that will be leading in AI, it would have an access to those microchips and chips. And that's why I would like to stretch this discussion into even more strategic like overlook of the future of AI.
I feel like they're incredibly important books to be reading, especially at the moment. The more we can inform ourselves about these things, then the better, definitely. Julian, what's your find of the week?
I'm scrabbling around seeing if I could change mine because I'm so impressed with Anna's. They're great.
Please don't change yours mine's just as bad.
I was watching a really interesting video about the NVIDIA H100 GPU and a presentation, like a keynote thing about that. And it was a whole world that, while I knew it was going on, I didn't know any specifics about. And yes, it's an interesting time we live in, put it that way. It's mine's much more mundane than that, which is just that I've taken to hopping subscriptions, like many people do, jumping month to month between different TV streaming subscriptions. And I went to Now TV because I wanted to, I haven't seen Succession, and everyone I know has said yes. Everyone in it's awful, and it's just a bit of a ride, put it that way. And I found that on Now TV in the UK, and I didn't know anything about Now TV. And a subscription was same price as all the other ones, and it's got ads. What's that about?
Yeah,
I thought I was paying a subscription to escape advertising, unlike the free players. And I know this isn't unusual, and there's lower tiers that have been introduced by some others, but I just kind of like, streaming providers, please pick a lane.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, that's a new thing because they weren't doing it. I remember using it last year or something, Now TV, and they weren't doing it then.
Well, that's what I've got, you know. And so anyway, this is, like I say, this isn't life or death stuff, but it's just kind of like,
it's annoying.
Really? You know, but anyway, there we are. That's my one. Shane, what's yours? What's your favorite?
Mine is fairly mundane, but it's also really helpful because I absolutely love lists and keeping track of tasks and projects. And I've got so many things going on that I need to sort of organize as well. And so I used to use things like Google Docs, Todoist as well for to-do lists and calendar blocking. But I've recently discovered Notion, and I know it's not necessarily a new thing, but it's an all-in-one app, and it keeps track of everything in one place, and people refer to it as a type of personal digital brain as well, which is interesting.
I need one of those.
Yeah, tell me about it. So do I.
I love it.
Yeah,
no, really not.
Yeah. I think we all do at this point in time. But yeah, they've got countless templates for all sorts of things, project management, business planning, mood boarding, everything that you can think of. And it also syncs with your Google Calendar, and they have a to-do list, which gives you sort of timely reminders. It's really fantastic. It's like having a really good assistant, basically. And also, because I often find things online with websites that I want to sort of remember, so they have a web clipper, and what it does, you can actually sort of label the different websites as well, so you can sort of easily reference different things, which is really, really helpful. Mm-hmm. So, and also it's free as well, so that they do have a paid option.
I would have opened with that, but okay, all right.
Oh, okay, yeah. I mean, that's always, it's always good to hear.
Yeah, you can't argue with free. I'll check that out. I mean, it's what I find with things like this is that it's always, it needs to get into your routine, because no matter how clever it is, if you don't use it every day, then you'll make lists and never go back to them, which is no list at all. But if that's, how far into this Notion journey are you?
Not terribly far into it, but I do want to keep it simple, and there is a way of keeping
it simple. I'll check back
in
a month. But yeah.
Yeah, check back in a month, and I'm sure I'll be a pro at
Excellent.
Try Notion Journey AI, the language model that is integrated with them, so you can write your briefs asking for LLM to like expand your briefs in Notion. It's really
all right. Well, that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you, Tushar. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you.
Really enlightening. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Production Expert Podcast.